Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Black Op Radio. This is number 163, and you're here in the studio with Len Osanek, Anita Langley, and today we have our guest, Mr. John Hutchinson. All right, well, it's great to have you here. I've been hearing rumors about this mad scientist for years. He's like an urban legend around here, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will have heard of you by now, because you have been... Well, there have been specials done on you, TV specials, and you've been actively guest on certain types of radio programs that are interested in weird and bizarre phenomena. So maybe you could just take us back to the start and right back to square one. How did you get interested in all these weird sciences, and what made you different as a kid?
Oh, good grief. Being a kid, I was always had my hands and mind in this stuff, and... chemistry and gunsmithing and electronics. And in the 70s, I got interested in Tesla's research and rebuilt a lot of his stuff. And I got some weird results, which people started to hear about. And then next thing I knew, well, good heavens, there was people coming around looking and taking films and that of the levitating objects, as I call them. And then it was thrown into the military-industrial complex during the 1980s. And from there, I just kept on and on and on. And I did a TV show with Tony Parsons, BCTV, on one levitation back in 1985. First one in Canadian news, I guess, or for that matter, maybe the world, on television, on news, Canadian news.
Well, I didn't know about that one. I've seen some more interest, more recent interest that they've had in you, but going back that far, I didn't realize it was... made it into the mainstream public. That's great. So what happened at some point, I mean, obviously people knew you were onto something. You had major interests come in and take a look. Did you feel like they were kind of gleaning information but not really wanting to reciprocate, or was it just kind of a brush-off thing or too hot to handle? What was your take on the situation?
My take on the situation back then, I was very green. I was never really associated with any business people or scientists or anybody, really, until I brought right in there, dragged in there, kind of, to accept them. And we set up on Riverside Drive, 141 Riverside, into this place where the Los Alamos team, U.S. Army Intelligence guys came, and I worked for 4 months, and I just went along working, not thinking much of what's going on. Until I asked them, you know, they said, well, we're with U.S. Army Intelligence and all this stuff. Whoa, what's going on here? And I was making $400 a day, cash. So they videotaped everything and then took photographs, then simply just disappeared. Although some of them wanted to continue on with the research. Back at Los Alamos, but one person classified it, and the colonel... still I'm in contact with this person, decided then later on to bring in McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation to do another take and have it unclassified.
Well, just to back up a bit, mm-hmm. for those not familiar with the kind of work you were doing, and I guess Anita was alluding to what got you interested in this, what were some of the things that you started out with that garnered attention from other people?
Well, some of the things started off high voltage experiments, electrostatic experiments, lightning bolts flying out of my window, I guess you'd say, and things floating around by themselves, which kind of freaked some people out. To me, it just seemed like a natural thing until people...
You started out as just a hobbyist then.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Kind of an artist character. I have no PhDs or anything.
Now, the equipment that you used is all equipment that you purchased on the market that anybody could go out and get if they knew what they were looking for? Is that what I gather? Or did you actually design any of this equipment yourself?
Most of it was designed by me in the 1970s.
Oh, okay.
And all through the 80s until what happened when I was in Europe for 2 years by invitation of the German government and the Austrian government, the equipment actually was seized by the Canadian government and put under the Alex Fraser Bridge. They tried to keep it a big secret, and, however, it made the front page of the Vancouver newspapers. And their statement was, Ministry secretly builds CBC site in Surrey, or PCB site in Surrey. And then when the other media, television people tried to go there, they were blocked. So they were concerned that this technology was going to Germany. And I was working with a German group in that, so it really, it's a long, involved stuff. I mean, there's so much stuff going on that I got literally cubic yards or cubic meters of boxes full of documentation and stuff from the Pentagon, stuff from Ottawa, and it goes on and on like that, and tapes and videotapes and tapes I don't have yet, which I'm still trying to pursue.
Okay, so obviously, I mean, with that amount of interest from organizations of that level, you don't really have any trouble establishing the legitimacy of the things that you did. I mean, obviously, things were being levitated, they were filmed, the technology that you were using was sound enough that these people could come in and say, hey, there's something really unique going on here. So the big question is, why didn't this somehow end up being developed into something useful for the people, of course? That's kind of a question that our listeners probably pretty much know the answer to, and you probably pretty much know the answer to intuitively. But did you really think that it would end up just sort of washing away in a sense, and that nothing would really be done by these people other than, you know, hush hush, it's classified?
Well, all I know is that it eventually, finding out over the years, that it did wind up in black operations, the biggest thing going in Area 51 and in other parts of the United States. By pure chance, I went onto the DOD website and just put Hutchison Effect in there and typed it in, and because I got onto this DOD thing because I had a previous contract, and it up popped Area 51. I thought, okay, this is kind of weird. I don't understand it. And so I cut it all, as you call it in computer language, and paste it onto Rumor Mill News. So I know where all the tech went to. It went into Black Operations and Skunk Works. And that's been brought out, bits and pieces of it. So basically what then the U.S. government does, or even the Canadian government, they just whitewash it by saying, oh, it's PK.
Yeah, I noticed that on the the program that they did. They had the guy on there. Oh, you know, they're questioning whether your PK ability might have had something to do with levitating these objects. When here you are working with all this Tesla-based type of science, and going, oh, you know, that is classic redirection.
Which for people maybe uninitiated, that is the, like you mentioned, high voltage experiments, gigantic coils. Fluctuating,
and telekinesis, yeah. Basically, they said, yeah, for Tesla, that's basically Tesla's work was the PK. They're talking about whether there might be some psychic interference, right?
Psychic interference or psychotronic interference, but it's not so. I mean, others have replicated the effects, and those guys have all the technology, and they just don't want to say they got something there going, because I've seen some of it surface through other documents.
Yeah, I imagine that there's probably a few things that they could work on with stuff like that they just assumed nobody knew was on the go.
Yeah. Oh, no. It all came to the surface in 2001 when Nick Cook did a story on black operations, the billion-dollar question, and he came across this one man of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, Boyd Bushman, who said, gee, well, here, I have this tape, and he showed all these experiments that I did. I had nothing to do with Lockheed at all. Boeing Aerospace, McDonnell Douglas, yes, but not Lockheed. And then I started getting phone calls. You better check this out, and I did, and good grief. And then later, Nick wrote a book on the hunt for Zero Point, where more of my stuff was discovered. So when I got a copy of the book in 2002 or 2003, I was actually reading, I'm featured in the back part of it, and I was reading it and kind of rolling on the floor laughing, because I didn't know any of this stuff was going on with me. Good grief, that's CIA characters and all sorts of weird, wonderful stuff you hear in Hollywood land, kind of folks, I guess, you know, CIA and DIA. And
it's funny, you think that stuff only exists in James Bond films, but really, James Bond, I think, is truer to life. I mean, we might not have quite the megalomaniacs, but I think, in essence, the things that go on, actually, from what I've heard, the fella who's actually behind it has got some serious connections in that world and really does know a thing or two about how those things work. So it wouldn't surprise me at all, and I guess I'm less surprised as the days go by about the things that can happen.
Are there some projects that you're working on, just something in particular that you found of interest that someone else was, are you implying they were taking credit for? This was things that you were brought down to elaborate on, and then years later you find it's got somebody else's stamp on it.
Yeah, the levitation, especially the levitation work in that. It's all the U.S. government guys have all that tech now, and also the EMP pulse generators and ball lightning generators and other stuff like that. They basically just...
Because the thought was, if you could get something to rotate fast enough, it would reverse gravity.
The French experiment, they used this rotation of electromagnetic field at the speed of light within an electrostatic field, and the results were quite amazing. I've never seen it. I only heard of it through my friends in France. Kind of interesting technology. But, again, the U.S. government guys and even the Canadian government guys are having fun with this stuff now.
Well, for our listeners, we do have a few people here who are pretty high up in the educated department and would probably really like to hear a little bit about what you are doing with the Tesla technology, if you wouldn't mind just explaining some of the basic, you know, in layman's terms for those who don't really get it, if that wouldn't be a problem for you to, what interested you, and what was Tesla doing that was innovative that we haven't really picked up on?
I've always been interested in radio technology and ancient radio stuff, and Tesla was basically the founder of radio, although Marconi's credited to it because Marconi basically stole the ideas. But I was interested in high voltage spark gap transmissions and all this kind of neat stuff. So Tesla, I went to develop most of his machinery and found that the interactions of the high voltage, high frequency fields seemed to work strangely within an electrostatic field. So, and trying to put it in layman's terms, it's like you have a radio transmitter or a walkie-talkie or something like that that puts out RF energy. It's magical how it can travel, let's say, 20 miles handheld, maybe, to another walkie-talkie, and you pick it up. So in this particular case, I was using Tesla waves and electrostatic waves and also RF waves, radio frequency waves, getting these results. So as time progressed on, I refined it in the 80s to where I was getting five major energy effects per hour, which was the levitation effects or hoverings. Or other occasions, the metals would start to go transparent or turn into rubber and start moving all over the place like a snake. And these were pretty large chunks of stainless steel and brass, copper, and aluminium extrusions, which were caught on Super 8 mm film and video.
Now, did you have difficulty containing this? Or did you find that things were happening outside the field that you expect? I mean, I heard that some of your neighbors got some surprises.
Oh, yes. When I tried to replicate it in an apartment, it's just an apartment. It's re-engineered, gutted apartment right to the bare walls. Everything thrown out, of course, for the machinery. And I engineered it to make it stronger, too, to hold the weight. However, working with film crews, Fox TV, and then later Griffin, I was trying to get some interesting effects, which I did do with Fox TV. I got a toy UFO to go to the ceiling and hover and spin around and fall down. That was aired on, actually, it's kind of funny, it's Fox Mulder's boss did that show, and that aired on Fox TV. And then after that, I worked with Griffin Films. Same kind of thing, but it was not that dynamic because I tend to have changed the place there a bit with more equipment. So, but the neighbors started to get all frantic because things would float around in their other apartments and things would fall over and metal would bend and the tenant above me started going crazy and the police came and took him away. And screaming and yelling, he's got technology down there and film crews and... The police have been around themselves, and during one experiment, walked right in and wondered what I was doing and said, well, I want to see let's see your firearms license. Oh, you got your firearms license. Oh, good. Yes, we just want to check that out kind of thing. And then they take off. And prior to that, of course, they did a full-bore invasion when I was working actually with Fox TV and Miramax Motion Pictures with a representative from New York out here. That was 2000 already. And they came full force and took photos of everything. Took an antique gun collection, and which was just in the floor. And they came in with all these people with the camera equipment and photographed all the way from the balcony right out to the door and closed the door and photographed that. Then they, basically. And then they returned all the old antique flintlocks about a week later and said everything's order. And then, and just recently, of course, I had the balcony incident, which made world news. And I got the files released through the Freedom of Information Act on their previous visit in 2000. And, 2000, summer of April 29th, when it aired on Fox. So they wanted to see it air, actually, the police department. I remember that now, okay? So, lots of fun. All kinds of crazy things in my life, I must say.
Well, it must be interesting being one of your neighbors.
Well, I try and not do too much, because I understand that I could go... Got a lot of problems with
that. Yeah, I do, and actually, I mean, we can joke about it, but I suppose that the wrong thing being in the wrong place could actually be bad news if that thing got a little too far out of, out of its field.
Concrete. I love concrete and seclusion for that kind of technology. So, well, the mayor got interested in all this because a friend of mine works in the city of New West, who I've known for 30 years, and the mayor thinks that he should get a heritage building for yours truly here. And I can set up a lab and not leave New West. Kind of funny. It's all kind of funny. I mean,
well, I know some of Tesla's final experiments, he was trying to do that. He was trying to put power on radio transmission. So if he had a carrier wave, he could put in a greater amount of power than they do now. He was trying to transmit and light up banks of lights miles away or hundreds of thousands of feet away. That was some of the experiments I think he was doing in Colorado.
And turn of the century there, quite amazing experiments, actually. And sending enough energy 25 miles away to blow up the main generators. It's quite amazing. And then, of course, he was to have his grand idea where he could transmit this energy.
Yeah.
And people could simply put two antennas in the ground and collect this energy to power everything. But
and that's pretty much when he was shut down, wasn't it? The thought that people could get all this energy and the big guys wouldn't get their cut. I think he really wanted to give it away. The guy was just a little maybe naive from what I gathered. Maybe I've got it wrong, but from...
Well, I think he passed away around that time. I mean, he had experiments where he was at least halfway to doing that, and like you say, he burned out the generator back at the dam. But he drew too much power. But the idea would be if you transferred something, like how they do radio waves, is they have a carrier wave at 1,000 cycles, and then you put the music on top of that. Then when it comes to your area of reception, you detect it, you strip away the 1,000 cycles signal, and then you're just left with the music. So that's how a normal AM radio works. And so if you could do that with any greater amount of power, where you had some kind of tuned coil, to get some kind of frequency and then put it into a transformer, and then you could just run your whole house from that if you were able to get that power. Like, for instance, off of the magnetic lines around the Earth, magnetic fields, and then you've had any kind of moving magnetic field, well, that would quadruple the
energy in that. It was actually 1900, and then many years later that he developed this massive site that would resonate the Earth and the ionosphere to generate this power. But then J. Pierpont Morgan decided that, how do you meter it? And shut it down. So he said, no more funding from me. So he shut it down, and then Tesla went into giving, after that, he was quite disconcerted, of course, went into giving lectures for many, many years about all his ideas on that. And then in 1943, he passed away. And then the CIA, or not, sorry, the FBI, there's so many different agencies I can mix them. The FBI came in there and took all the files out of his, the hotel's safe and his room. And to this day, there's people still looking for some of the files that phone me up and think I might have a lead for them, and then they disappear.
Has anybody ever been able to get anything from them out of Freedom of Information Act searches?
I have seen the Tesla material surface in the DoD solicitation handbooks, which I made the issue and a great argument over that I should get these because I worked for you guys, and then they send them, and then I saw the material surface and disappear. Year after year, you get all these handbooks and stuff and what they're looking for or what they're doing. And then I seen the name Tesla coming up several times.
Well, when I first contacted you, I mentioned the name Walter Russell. I understand that he was a peer of Tesla's, and I've read some of his books and found really fascinating. And I'm wondering, you indicated that you've read some of these. Did you find there was a lot of similarities? He is much more spiritual in his approach than I think your average scientist, in that he pretty much sees the God effect of everything moving, and but he seemed to have a really amazing grasp of the zero point from a philosophical perspective. I wonder what your take is on that.
I think, personally, it's all intertwined. I think it's spiritual. It's all, like, science and spirituality and energies beyond our comprehension are all one.
Do you want to give me a definition of zero point?
If I can.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's a tough one, and it's still tough to everybody. It's way out there. But it's the equivalent to... I have to do it in layman terminology. And it is supported by a lot of... the upper scientists there, I guess they call them. But it's if you take a cubic foot, let's say, of empty space, and you are able to harness the subatomic movements, which is the zero point, and utilize that as an energy source, you can power the Earth's energy needs for 100 years from that cubic foot of space-time. And that space-time can be anywhere. It can be right here or outside or anywhere.
I heard a really good analogy of how to tap into this, sort of using a ratchet effect. For example, if you have a vehicle that's pointed uphill on a ratchet, and it's being hit, bang, 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 from all directions, every now and then it's going to be hit from behind, and it's going to push forward a little bit. The zero point, by the same token, can be channeled in that, because everything, on one level, everything's moving. So it's kind of the opposite of where we are here, is it takes energy to move things, yet on another level, would take a lot more energy to slow it down and stop it from moving. So there is a point where you should naturally be able to just tap into that and have it, you know, channeled into this level of operation.
So you're talking subatomic energy and trying to harness that.
Harness that constant motion.
Yeah,
air
right.
Or
yeah.
Carbon or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So tapping into it, you can do it through such things as rocks or metals. And that's what Dr. Franklin Mead has done, actually, in his interesting patent of 1996, December 31, which is extremely hard to find that patent. I searched and searched, and it's like it's classified now. But it was ceramic materials that will capture a tiny portion of the zero-point energy. And I do have the patent numbers and all that. It was done by my friend Grant Raymond. And it works on that principle of ceramics. And myself, I have a little zero-point energy device made of common minerals, which converts a tiny bit, into a small little bit of direct current. And if one cubic inch of the material put out up to 1.7 volts or more, but the energy from it to drive anything is very weak. But Grant Raymond was able to actually power an alarm clock and a calculator, so I'm trying to actually market it as a tricorder, a real tricorder, and I got some friends that are interested in doing that because the voltage on it varies. If you move it around, it picks up different things. And one of them that was stolen a long time ago, one of these little crystal cells, power cells, it was used for oil detection and water and minerals by a rather unscrupulous character, my, of course, former business partner for Pinnacle Oil International, that nobody wants to touch that area with a 10-foot pole. It's oil companies and evil and all kinds of...
The face of evil itself.
Right? Oh, yeah, the Bush characters and all those jokers and clowns and psychopaths. Oh, boy, 9/11, what a mess that is. Okay.
Well, if somebody's got to be the bad guy, you know, make the story interesting.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend that actually seen it go down there in New York. He worked for Reuters and saw all the lies and stuff going right before the computer screen right inside the building. And he... asked me to contact Ted Kennedy, which I tried to do because I know some congressmen people that are good people, like Berkeley Bedell, who's into alternative medicine, which I'm into that too, who actually visit me here in New West. So I decided to write Ted Kennedy for Woody, what Woody's seen about the F-18s or 15s, whatever they are, that shot down all these planes. But the U.S. airspace was left open for 21 solid minutes without them doing anything about it. It was just deliberately left open so that these incidents could happen to these buildings and that.
Yeah, and you know, John Judge was mentioning that in the year prior, there were something like 140 some odd incidents where aircraft went out of, you know, off their due course, and immediately there's a scrambling that goes on. We all know about the well-known case about, you know, the golfer, yeah, Payne Stewart, and how quickly they scrambled planes to get that situation under control. So yes, what you're mentioning there, that's not just a little bit of an oversight. That is a glaring. That requires stand down orders because there are automatic systems in place when something goes awry like that. That's definitely more than just a smoking gun.
It's a smoking cannon, maybe a huge cannon too, because there's so many different shots and angles of the building from all these different situations. Look like a movie. And for the space to be left open, that's either 21 to 26 minutes. Woody just, as I mentioned before, Woody was so concerned over it, he contacted me to make the contact for him through Ted Kennedy, but I couldn't. Ted never wrote back, so then I said, Berkeley Bedell, here is his phone number. You prepare the facts, send it over, and say you know me, and take it from there. But Woody worked at Reuters. He saw the screens changing, the computer screens and all the information just totally was wiped off, and the space was left open for 21 to 26 minutes. Nothing was done. Everything was quiet, which really disturbed Woody. And you can actually see from his building in New York the planes going into the towers and the information changing constantly. And then they got the story that, oh, gee, yeah, it was people crashing these, terrorists crashing these planes into the buildings and all that stuff. And then the Pentagon stuff, that didn't surface until much later. Their videos, their archives, many months later, if not a year. I don't really see anything.
Now, see, that's something, too, that really bothers me. I mean, the Pentagon's got security cameras all over the place. They should have been able to release some proper video footage.
They didn't release anything until, I think, 6 months or a year later, and it was just looked like a missile going into something.
And that's pretty much inexcusable. And I personally, I mean, to me, it seems logical that a missile would have hit the building. I know there's lots of controversy about what hit the building and stuff, but, you know, if there was any kind of defense system going on at all, you know, that plane should have at least been hit by a missile as it was getting there, you know. I know there's lots of big questions about that, but now it just stinks from top to bottom.
And getting more stinkier out there from all over, from what I hear on the internet and other people and some radio shows. It's getting pretty smelly with for old Georgie there, the little man with the big mouth.
Yeah, he might actually be the first president to seriously do jail time.
I sure hope he does.
Well, him and Daddy both, you know, him maybe they can share a cell together.
Should do war trials.
Yeah, I hear people refer to them now as the Bush crime family.
Yeah, good point. I mean, they got probably got Bin Laden in a hotel somewhere. Oh, Bin Laden, come on up, you know, when Bush is up for, let's say, election.
Yeah, we've been saying that.
Oh, you guys, yeah.
Okay. All along, yeah.
Len's jaded. He's been predicting that one for a long time. He predicted the Saddam business, too. You know, they'll get Saddam, you know, things get... So, actually, he is probably the first person I heard to voice concerns that 9/11 might have more to it. And everybody was being so sensitive and so concerned, but there were things that just weren't right. Right from the start that, you know, after you've seen some of this stuff for a while, you just get a bit of a taste for when...
Yeah, like today, we were just talking about earlier with with Jim Fetzer about the bombing in Spain, and that they found outside in a van some Arabic, a cassette with Arabic, you know, the writings from the Quran, and it's Al Qaeda, and they must have mentioned it on CNN 33 times, you know, Al Qaeda, Al Qaeda. They just keep mentioning the word, and as they interview people from Spain and whatnot, they say, well, we have a big problem here with the Basque separatist party and movement, and it's a whole almost civil war there in Spain going on. It's got nothing to do with Al Qaeda.
No.
Same thing in the Philippines and the thing that strikes me about that is that as soon as I hear that, it's like when they said to have found Muhammad Atta's passport in the rubble, you know.
Unbelievable,
you know.
How convenient. Yeah. That's so everything's nicely...
Or like, you know, the little CE-399, the little bullet was just put on a stretcher in Kennedy's assassination. You know, they just found that. And it goes on and on and on, tried and true little techniques of disinformation where they drop some little clue for you.
Oh, they have to drop a little clue. I mean, that sort of, you know, it sort of goes around and around. I mean,
and other people who are legitimately, if they found something, will wave it around like a flag, saying this is important. Everybody, look here. You know.
Well, you know, I was quite happy to see the X-Files when that aired. It was basically right to the truth, and the person, Chris Carter, his friend was Jerry Barnesworth. He's a friend of mine, who gives him all the information of what the government really does. And there are these good old boys that sit around. Planning and doing strategy work on that.
Well, I had actually heard that was the inspiration behind the X-Files. While there's a lot of course, televisionized, fictionalized stuff, that actually it was inspired by malfeasance.
A lot of background. For instance, like the Unit 731, all sorts of things like that.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, kind of ironically, when they did that spin-off series called The Lone Gunman, the three helpers that were...
That was funny, and they took it off.
Well, you know what the first episode was? Was a big corporation being able to remotely control the planes and flying them into the World Trade Center.
Yeah, that doesn't go
so... Did you see that episode?
That aired
May 2001. You know, someone had tipped them off. You know, somebody could be planning this and all that. It'd be an interesting episode for a TV show. So the guy says, okay, write me a script. And like you say, I heard the similar thing about the old TV show Mission Impossible. You know, the way it was put to me was more like, a lot of these things you can't ever talk about, but when people are sitting around talking over coffee, they would let a few ideas slip out where they weren't going to give you the particulars, but did you know we have a way to change, or we can, you know, we could melt gold and we could get it out of a safe without anybody knowing it, or we could do this, you know, or, you know, and...
Yeah, example, a case in point, for example, the movie Air America that Mel Gibson did way, way back then. You know, I mean, those in the know that Air America was this corrupt, probably still is, CIA-held airline running drugs and stuff like that. But, you know, it just looked like a cheesy movie. But Hollywood actually is pretty good that way. I know they get slammed a lot for violence, this, violence, that. But there are people there who, some of the movies that come out of there are so full of fact, and they're called fiction, that, you know that there are a lot of good people on the inside that are doing their part to bring us all forward in the information.
Well, I'm not even sure if it's good, but it's just that people are doing it. Like,
well, they're doing it. People may have their own personal interests plenty of times, but, you know, I think in a lot of cases, as you mentioned, some of these great, great, escapades go down, and the people involved, they want it somewhere to be immortalized. And if it's called fiction, call it fiction, whatever. Just write the story, put it out there. And I think there's probably a lot more of those out there than people know.
Like, there was that movie, I think, Primary Colors. And I think the script was credited to Anonymous. That, you know, that follow Bill Clinton on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, what went on, but they couldn't say that. Just the one John Travolta played.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a friend down there, one of many down there, Steven Seagal. He did a movie called Deadly Ground. And I never seen Steven in any movies. I met him down there in 99. Spent some time at his home there because he's into doing interesting stuff. And then it was about a year or two ago, I saw on Deadly Ground where he slams into the oil companies at the very end, about the evil oil companies. Well, I often wondered why Steven was talking about when he did that movie. I was talking to him in person. Well, he couldn't find any work anywhere until just a little while ago, when he got a job in Toronto there making a film on something. I don't know what he does, but I always remember that he was chopped off many years.
Yeah, he ticked off some of the wrong people. And I don't want to mention my favorite Hollywood heavyweight, Jack Valenti, you know, but I mean, if people like him say it's a no-go and you do it anyways, I suspect that it's pretty easy to get blacklisted.
Well, we had a fellow we cared about, Jesse Ventura, seemed to really shoot from the hip, and he did a lot of interesting shows on the JFK assassination, and when he did his final show there and did an expose of, you know, he had Jim Fetzer on, and a few other people, the names escape me right now, but just people there in Bethesda Hospital and whatnot, and Gerald Posner was supposed to be on, and Gerald refused, and they didn't want him to do the show. He came on anyway and did the show, and he called Gerald Posner for not showing up there to debate. Gerald Posner is somebody who thinks that Lee Oswald killed JFK, and he's a lone nut, and going waving that flag, and Warren Commission apologist. But, Jesse called him the dork of the week, you know, named him the dork of the week for not showing up there, and, you know, if he had some real credible evidence or proof, he should have been man enough to, you know, after writing a book that thick all about how Lee Oswald did it after all, he should be able to support some of these theories. And the guy didn't show up, so he named him the dork of the week. And then that show, Jesse's America, I think it was called, is now off the air.
Yeah, they can. Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, grief. Well,
you can only handle so much truth in the soup kitchen.
That's a good way of putting it. A lot of actors and producers in that are artists like myself, and they know the truth. You know, what's that old saying by an old president there? You can fool the people most of the time, but you can't fool them all the time. If you're up there, George, listening, take heed. Take heed.
Yeah, I say their days are numbered. I know we get really cocky feeling in here because from this perspective, you know, the listeners that we get are well educated, and you get a lot of people going, yes, yes, you're on to this and you're on to this. You know, sometimes you go out and you talk to people who aren't so educated, and it can bring you down a few notches. But still, though, you know, it's not just our site. You look at how independent media is taking off. You know, I mean, you're mentioning Rumor Mill News, and I know you post there regularly, and I've got to encourage people listening to just check out the website here and there, rumormillnews.com. You know, a lot of different people posting stuff, and there's a lot of weird stuff and stuff that, you know, but the beauty of it is that people are putting stuff out there. You can go through, read the articles, don't read the articles, but there's so much information there that you might not ever see on CNN, and you're talking about some real hardcore stuff. And yeah, okay, you're going to have a certain amount of mashed potatoes because that's, you know, not every day is a good news day. And, you know, people like to talk, but really a great source of information. There are a few out there.
There is a few out there. I mean, what's more nauseating to me is, what's the news hour? I mean, they don't even report anything worth reporting.
Oh, yeah. My husband hit the roof today because the first thing on was Todd Bertuzzi after this bombing, you know, and the first thing to come on with is the big apology. And
That was pretty pathetic. I mean, I looked at that and thought, my God, I mean, there's so much going on in the world. They're reporting this stupid story. I thought, oh, man, what's going on? I just can't stand this Tony Parsons soupy, sloppy
stuff. It is a big story for sports, but sports has its own slot.
One thing that really infuriated me about CNN today is the number of times they mentioned Al-Qaeda, when they just kept mentioning Al-Qaeda, although they had already had somebody on saying that it was a Basque separatist movement and all that.
You know that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, and you don't need evidence. All we know is the right person to say it's fact, and it's fact. So CNN is notoriously bad for that, aren't they?
Well, there's some little tiny things that stick with me, little sentences here and there that over your life you look back at a few things. And, you know, I'll never forget that time we interviewed that fellow who'd interviewed Osama bin Laden before 9/11, and he said he spoke to Osama for, I don't know, 2-3 hours straight, and he said the word Al-Qaeda didn't come up once.
Yeah,
and I'm starting to wonder how much of an invention, a boogeyman, this whole thing is, an enigma. Al-Qaeda, it's almost as if it's communism.
Yeah, in all fairness, though, I was aware of Al-Qaeda before then.
I understand.
Al-Qaeda wasn't the emphasis of the whole interview, and I think that's a very important point to bring up still. This particular individual, a journalist from Pakistan, had this amazing interview, and he had to actually get out of Pakistan and get to Canada before he could even talk about it because he was afraid he was going to end up in Guantanamo Bay, which he most likely would have. Nobody really wants to hear what he had to say about this. Of course, Osama, living in a cave, unable to communicate with his men because the phones were down all the time, isn't in the best position to totally mastermind something like this. Not to say that he isn't involved, and in fact, he was bragging that something big was going to come down to knock them down to size. But yeah, the point you make about Al-Qaeda, they make Al-Qaeda sound like they're the be-all and end-all of terrorism, when really they're just a means to an end, and there are people pulling the strings, and they can call it Al-Qaeda, they can call it whatever branch over here, whatever branch over there. My understanding is that we're talking about a much larger group known as the International Islamic Front. And Al-Qaeda is a branch, it's an operational branch of that, but that's just a part of it. And Al-Qaeda, by the way, translates, the English translation is the base. It just means the base. This is the place from which they fight. And when I had prior warning letters in my hand about this that came from Michael Reconegudo, and he quite specifically mentioned bin Laden, but the name, the translation he used for Al-Qaeda was the base. That is the English name. And I don't know why we're going on calling them Al-Qaeda all over the place, because in anywhere else in our language, we just use the English translation. Why don't we just call them the base? You know, that's what the word means for us. So I don't know. It's got to sound a little bit exotic, I guess, to really get our interest.
I guess so. I mean, what, you know, when the Oklahoma bombing happened, they automatically thought it was Muslims right away, but it turned out to be different folks, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know,
they're debatable too.
There are a lot of questions about that one that haven't been properly addressed, and
or the TWA flight.
TWA 800, yeah. And you know what still picks my butt? Right after 9/11, that plane went down in New York. You recall, just a few days later, under the very suspicious circumstances, I'm still convinced that plane was shot down. First thing we heard was, oh, the engine just disintegrated. Yet it took them how many days to say, oh no, the engine's intact. Well, why did they say that in the first place? They had it on the ground in one piece, yet they said the thing disintegrated because the tail flew forward and hit it. You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I love
Tell me,
story.
What was that? A hole in it? You know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Too much.
Too much, yeah. Some of those stories are pretty wild and fantastic. And I always love the famous one from the CIA, poor original, because you can't even read it. It's not blacked out. It's just, you can't read it. They say poor original. Whatever that means. I don't know.
Well, it's redacted, right, when they black everything out.
Yeah, my hobby kind of thing is to poke at them and try and drag out information, but I'm that way. I got that not nasty, but mischievous nature about me.
You know, you got to have a sense of humor, because after a while, all this stuff just gets depressing otherwise. And, you know, what are we here for? We're here to make the place better or give up. And I'm not going to choose the latter, so.
Exactly.
Put on a smile, roll up your sleeves.
Put on a smile, roll up your sleeves, be happy, and try and influence others that it isn't that bad, and keep rolling along.
And it doesn't hurt to poke fun at these establishments, because, you know, there are people even within them that are good people.
That's
and
very true.
You know, maybe some of these people just need a little wake-up shot and a sense of humor to look at ourselves. If we can't look at ourselves and laugh a little bit, then, you know, we're too uptight.
Yeah, very, very, very uptight.
Well, is there before we wrap up on that, is there some things that you wanted to bring up that were talking about inventions and
well, actually,
know,
there is a good
technologies
question.
Technologies that you guys were talking about, because obviously
sort of
you've spoken
off the
before.
Track there, but yeah,
I'm
just working on the tricorder right now, and eventually I'm going to put out this. Hopefully, set up a place where I can put demonstrations on TV of gravity and real effects instead of special effects. Someday is one of my dreams, of course, and maybe also that I can help and contribute in some small way to a new energy source someday.
Well, you never know. You might be well on the way to that. Well, when you're ready to do an online demonstration, let us know, because maybe we can set up some kind of a internet video shot. Len's done some pretty, you know, he can film you broadcast over that.
Well, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sure. Or levitate something outside, like a car. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of dramatic. I think the black ops people would be pressing hard against my windows. It's the only problem with those guys.
Now, what kind of things are you... Are you still working then as a hobby here in New West, then?
I'm into a lot of things here. I enjoy working with the Artificial Reef Society on Navy ships. I got an interest in military surplus equipment. So I like collecting it. Doing the experiments, doing the Ark of the Covenant for TLC, that was fun. And having sparks flying around and actually have the Ark of the Covenant going into the big balls of flame.
Now, when is that supposed to be broadcasting?
Well, Blue Book Films. It's done by Blue Book Films, Bruce Burgess, who loves to fly over Area 51 and try and get shot down almost. And I said, I'm with you, Bruce. But anyway, when that airs, I'm not sure. They have all of 50 or 40 hours of tape they're still going through. And sometime this year, I think, on TLC.
Great. Well, maybe you could let us know when that's coming up so that we could alert our listeners and people can tune in.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a fun show. I did it with Corinne there, and we were, had all this lightning and fire and flames and stuff flying around, and a lot of fun doing that one.
So now, what was the purpose of this then? You guys actually built an ark?
We built an Ark of the Covenant. I got a baby one at my place, and although the cherubim are eagles because I couldn't find any cherubims, and then the real one was built in New West here to the huge specifications, but in its particular problem, we couldn't find any real solid metal cherubim, so they were made in the United Kingdom by Blue Book, sent over, and they're made out of styrofoam and painted with gold. So we took it to metal supermarkets in Richmond to do the testing, and all the energy started to collect inside the cherubim through the gold paint. And these things started sparking and flames and stuff all over the place, and they turned into these big fireballs. And
so is this done completely to the Bible specs?
I was doing it to the Bible specs. It kind of ran off course, unfortunately, due to Blue Book's other interest in a motion picture in France, was to build a thing to the specs, which we did do, the wood part anyway, and put all the metal parts in, so that this thing would be self-reactive, which indeed it is. We demonstrated a bit of that.
Now, and was this for a film?
This is for a TLC TV special.
Oh, okay.
1 hour special on TLC.
Right.
To show that the Ark does put energy out. And what happened here, the Ark does put energy out, but I had to pump energy into it. But the idea was to build a voltaic pile, number one, and then do electrostatic tests to show that you can get massive sparks out of this thing. Which we tried to do, but Bruce...
So you say voltaic, you're making it into some sort of battery?
Like a battery, yeah. We had from the metal supermarkets zinc plates and copper plates, and we actually show us building the thing. The plates and that.
Oh, so that show's not out yet?
The show's not out yet, no. They're still working on putting it all together, and they got some footage from Griffin Films, who was helping out a bit, and it's a done deal. It's just, I don't know when it's going to air. We got to sign our release forms. I get paid the other several thousand dollars for our time and all that.
Mm.
So that's one that's going to be out there on TLC, and the Bermuda Triangle thing will be on TLC and a few others.
That sounds like a real fun project to be involved in. I mean, it must have been something else. Especially when you're talking about tackling something that's got such historical significance. Because I've heard talk about this for the longest time. Oh, the reason the Ark was so dangerous was it was just a plain old battery, and anybody who didn't know any better was going to get killed if they tried to get at those books, right?
Well, yeah. It's that, or it's an electrostatic accumulator, like Ben Franklin's Leyden jars. The thing does accumulate electrostatic energy and can build up a horrendous charge, and you touch it, and you get zapped. So the ancient ones would have thought that was God. Good grief, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, a tremendous force of power in that. It's kind of funny when you think about how that could actually fuel origin. But how would they even have discovered that in the first place?
Well, I think it goes back actually to Egypt times when Egyptians knew about electroplating and had the Baghdad battery, which is a power source filled with fruit juice and all that that can do things. And I think they knew how to... We're well aware of electrostatic energy through their loom machines, their spinning wheels for the static.
Oh, right, because static would build up from that. So they found a way to...
Harness it by... Actually, somebody suggested that they powered the Ark that way. When you have the tabernacle around the Ark, you're building up tremendous electrostatic charges in dry desert conditions, and that would collect on the Ark, and anybody going near it would get shot across the room. Touching a hot doorknob kind of thing. Same kind of thing.
Huh. Pretty fascinating stuff. So whose idea was it? Was it TLC just came up with this idea, or did somebody just decide, oh, John Hutchison, let's see if he can find something to put this guy to work on? Or like, how did this...
I did a previous show with Bruce Burgess. Again, it was another Bermuda Triangle story for TLC, which aired a while ago. And Bruce decided to pick me because I was involved in a military-industrial complex and would like to do crazy things like what Bruce would do, like walk in the area in 51 and get shot at. But he approached me back, oh, good grief, this is last summer, on his theory of building this thing to actually have me in Egypt with a helicopter and dropping me on Mount Sinai with this thing. And I say, well, make sure I have an AK-47 just in case, okay, Bruce? So this didn't transpire, though. We talked about all the different situations where we're going to use the little church on 6th and 12th, and that turned into another area to work. And Bruce just wanted to show that this, build the ark, you can do it. Yes, I can do it. Form my team. I formed my team. And we started working on it and basically showing how this thing would work. And the grand finale was just after New Year's at the metal supermarket in Richmond there, where we had it running all kinds of different frequencies, and even with help from a Tesla coil on the run, actually making the thing on New Year's Eve until 2 a.m., I believe. And I said, done, to the last wind to the end of this long core. I wasn't going to stop. I was going to finish it. Next day, we're running off to Ronnie's and picking up the primary circuits for the thing, and by the time we got to Metal Supermarket, set everything up and let her rip. And we got some interesting, weird energy effects and a lot of weird lighting and that kind of stuff in the coils. And
well, it really sounds like you need somebody to come along and set you up in a decent lab and just let you go to town, eh?
Well, I get into a lot of mischief and fun that way, sure.
That's the best way to get stuff done, though. Yeah, oh, yeah. You can't enjoy what you're doing, and there's not much point. That's really why you're discovering, because the curiosity pulls you forward, right?
I'm kind of like an artist, like you folks are. I mean, I'm not just confined to levitation or energy. I'm into other interesting things, like antique machinery and historical things of history and machinery and radio and almost anything, I guess. Just one of those things.
So if there was an area that you'd like to get into that you haven't really traversed yet, is there something that is off the top of your head that you could say that you still want to delve into?
I would really like to delve into life extension. I have been doing it for a long time, and that's an interest of mine. It's rather expensive, but I'd like to go deeper into that. And I'm my own guinea pig, by the way, so do that. And the other thing I'd probably do out there, of course, is set up a place for homeless folk, along with my lady, who I'm going to marry, and Corinne.
Oh, you got a date on that?
Oh, it could be in June. I mean, I've had some previous girlfriends, and for some reason she didn't, most of them didn't run away. I thought most women would run away from a lunatic like me, but no, I just, getting married, yes, John. But, we were talking about a building with a lab on top of it just the other night, and some help for homeless folks out there. There's so many homeless people around. And honestly find I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. I have known big shots, like communicating perhaps to the Rockefellers or to Prince Liechtenstein for 13 years by letters and all that. But what I find is basically the happiest people I feel to be with are people out there on the street. They got an honor thing, they're happy, and I thought, I bet they'd be uncomfortable with $1 million. And I am actually uncomfortable with money too. So I find more enjoyment actually talking with a lot of folks out on the street. Because they're down to earth and human.
I guess you don't have to worry about money spoiling you then. That's a good thing.
No, I get rid of it pretty fast. I just...
Well, that's the thing.
I don't care. I mean, it's... I have no desire. I would like to have money so I can sort of move and then set up a proper
place.
Yeah,
pursue your interest. And that's a more healthy, actually, attitude towards money. I always look at money, it should be a tool that we use to gain our ends, not the ends itself.
Oh, yeah.
This is a big part of our problem, is that people lose sight of what that's really all about.
It's like this Prince Liechtenstein character. I've been in contact for so long. He's always saying he's going to sponsor everybody. He never sends any money. And I thought, what does he do? He's one of the richest characters in the world. And what does he do? I don't know. I find sometimes the most miserable people in the world are the richest.
Yeah, actually, that's probably a very good point, because I think there's probably like this subconscious thing that bugs people when they know they haven't really contributed or earned what they've got.
They never think they have enough.
Yeah, that's really fascinates me. That's really an interesting story. You know, they have all this money, even stayed in some of these characters' homes, and they feel that they don't have enough. They feel like they want to somehow do more with it. Although I bet some that get rid of it or keep it balanced, they donate it into, like in San Francisco, the Dakin Institute, school for kids and all that. It's another weird...
No, I think in a lot of cases it's because it's people, as you say, you consider yourself an artist. Well, people who don't have something that isn't of a personal interest to them that drives them forward tend to need to focus that in somewhere else. And I think a lot of people, that's the symptom that we see of this money hunger, money, because that's that comfort that people are looking for when they haven't got something that fills their lives. You know, for us, we've got music, we've got our desire to, you know, communicate all these things that are going on in the world, or you've got all these hobbies, and you call them hobbies, they're your life, they're not just hobbies, but, you know, there are a lot of people out there that don't have those things, that they have this emptiness, and it's really pretty sad, you know, and you got somebody who's just focused on making money, those are the people with the emptiest lives.
Oh my God, one of the worst shows on TV is that Donald Trump thing. You ever seen
scary.
That?
That's scary. That's,
oh yeah,
that's
I mean, I want to go to the bathroom, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
What is
if anybody listening out there has got this problem where they have too much money, send it to Black Ops Radio, Carolina Sanic,
8 yeah, we'll help you redistribute
Street.
It, right, yeah. Glenn? Right, yeah, okay.
Exactly.
There are lots of good causes out there, actually, in all seriousness. I know that there are a lot of our listeners do what they can to try and, you know, contribute where they can. So that's always a good thing. And I know, you know, if I had the money, that homeless thing, that's a great, you know, a great way to go.
I think so, too. I mean, that's why I'm trying to... The mayor made contact to me, and I'm trying to send out some hints his way for this building.
So you'd end up with a heritage building and a lab on top and something at the bottom.
That's what Corinne and I are talking about, and we also mentioned to the mayor. But he isn't coming back on it too much yet. So he has phoned me. We talked a few times. But I really wish that he had enough steam and energy to do something like that.
Well, those things, sometimes you got to find the right piece of property.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I was thinking of that Masonic temple over there. I don't know who owns that, but it's a nice solid structure.
Yeah, well, interesting symbols to inspire you too, probably.
Well, it's just a building. I mean, it was once owned by them, but it's usually a good engineered structure that's not a fire trap, or it's got some unique... I like vault doors and things.
That kind of
weird stuff. I don't know.
Well, this is New West. There's a fair bit of stuff around. They used to have that old prison there. I remember we used to go out there play our instruments in there in the middle of the night. Nobody'd bug you and stuff, but I guess they've torn all that down a lot.
Okay, well, forget about that.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
That was fun.
I mean, Corinne and I do.
Breaking into a prison, who does that? Can you?
Oh, I love it.
Crazy.
You get goodies out of it?
You're supposed to be breaking out, not breaking in.
I know.
All we were talking about it was the shutdown. So get back on a serious note then. Before we wrap up, Anita, is there any things that you wanted to bring up we haven't gotten to?
Actually, I think I've pretty much asked the questions that I have on the top of my head. So you said where you're going pretty much in the future. I'd like to just hear from you as things go along and let us know what you're doing. Keep us up, you know, posted.
Oh, I'm quite happy. I didn't know you guys existed here, and it's New West is always amazing with new things always popping up. You guys exist. Wow, Black Ops Radio. Really? In New Westminster? Cool.
Oh, this is an innovative little area of the world, I think.
Yes.
A great place to live.
Diverse people, and that's what I like about it, too.
Well, we've had you here for a good hour. It's been so nice having you in the studio. You know, I think this is only the second interview we've done where we've had guests in the studio because everybody's long distance somewhere.
Yeah, I thought I'd do
quite this. Quite a switch to be able to actually look somebody in the eyes and talk to them and ask you questions.
It's kind of fun. I haven't done a studio one. I don't think I ever have done a studio radio interview. So this is my first time, too.
Oh, well, good.
Cool.
Good. First time.
Really okay, cool. Then, well, is there anything that you want to bring up that we didn't get to yet? Or?
Oh, do you have a website?
Yes. Well, I think the best way, I'm kind of computer stupid, too. It's, I got a website, Rumor Mill News, is one of them where people post things. But under Hutchison Effect, Google search that out, and there's all kinds of websites that pop up. I guess Coast to Coast, no, it comes up under...
Well, I'll do a search, and I'll find a link, and I'll post that next to the interview.
Yeah, we can put you got the forum that goes as a branch off the Rumor Mill News, so we can put a link to that, too, and people can just sort of have a gander at some of the conversations that go on in your world. So.
Okay, sure. No, I love people posting things there, and I'm trying to make it interesting for folks to post on any topic they want to, and it's rumormillnews.com, and it's... there's what they call a Hutchison forum, so you just click on there and then you're all set.
Yeah, on the front page is a little link to that
That's
section, right.
Right?
Okay, great. All right, well, excellent. It's so nice to have you here.
Real pleasure.
And we'll have to talk to you again sometime.
Yeah, for sure.
Great.
A lot of fun. Thanks.
Okay. And thanks again to our listeners for tuning in. Another episode of Black Rock Radio, 163 this time.
Right. And we'll see you next week then.
Goodbye, everyone.
And thanks for the emails.
Listening to Black Op Radio, broadcasting weekly from the Fiasco Brothers Recording Studio in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network.